welcome to Leak Cadre, the War Machine podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously. I'm Mike.
I'm Kurt.
I'm Benj.
And I'm Dom.
Hooray! We got all the intros done. And no one interrupted me.
I thought about it. I did think about it. I just wanted to know that I did think about it.
The memory of Alex is fading.
It's not... Wait, you say that, but I did see him like last week. We'll come back to that later.
Yes, we will come back to that later. A lot's happened since the last time we actually managed to record. We'll ignore most of it and concentrate on the fun bits. First up would be the fact that we have now had the second Lock and Load in the EU. Well, the Lock and Load EU titled, but in the UK. Yes, so in the middle of May at Magna in Sheffield. No, well, Sheffield, Rotherham, Sheffield. Are we placing bets on this one?
I don't know the difference.
It's just the north to you.
In the south. It's north. It's in the north. It's a long way.
Allegedly, it claims to be in Sheffield. It is, in fact, pretty much close to Rotherham. So, the event was held over 3 days at Magna, which is a repurposed steel mill that's been changed into a museum, event space. I don't know what else, because that building is genuinely ginormous.
Did it have on-site accommodation?
It did not.
No.
I would say that is, if I was to pick a failing of the entire thing, that would be it. I can see why they would choose it as a venue, because having run conventions for my sins in the past, finding big event spaces with attached accommodation is the devil's own game. Unless you want to be in the middle of nowhere, or worse yet, Milton Keynes, you will struggle.
It cost a fortune.
Yes. And where they were, they did have a very extensive event space, to the point where I think at like a full fifth of it was cordoned off purely for the... not a keynote. What was it they called it?
Preview.
Preview, that was it. Yes, it was definitely not a keynote. Not a keynote, not at all, not even slightly.
There's a legal distinction somewhere.
Just because it looked and sounded like a keynote did not mean it was a keynote.
There's other words out there. If they don't want to use the word keynote, yes. Just use showcase.
Ah, yes. But preview will do. So from the point of view of kind of getting there, you walk through the massive halls of Magna, and then we're presented with this huge space, filled end-to-end with tables, where you had an area for the competitive play stuff, an area down the middle that was for the narrative events, a second smaller competitive play area, and then right at the bottom was the Iron Arena stuff. Also in the space was the Paint and Take. There was a small store that was set up as well. And there was kind of various seminar rooms off to one end. You had got an on-site bar, which was decent. Prices were there.
Like the pause was important. Yep.
Yeah. this is the thing, right? The prices were possibly a little higher than I'd have liked, but also I'd have had to walk somewhere else to go and get another drink that was cheaper. And it's like, do I pay an extra pound just to have a drink here? Yes, I do. There was also some on-site catering, which I'm told was on the first night was not good.
It was adequate.
Apparently the burgers were the reason that Martin Jenkins did not appear for part of Saturday. We'll put it that way.
Oh dear.
Yes.
Ooh.
It was markedly improved afterwards, but apparently that initial evening was not good. Off to the side, you got kind of a painting space, which, Dom, did you go to any of the painting seminars?
So you went to the pictures, Mike.
I went to the basing seminar.
Yes. Yeah.
I could have done more painting, but I'm well entrenched in what I do at the moment. It would have been lost on me. What I regret doing was the Paint and Take, because I've walked past several times and the selection of models was amazing.
Yeah.
But I always forgot to go back when I had a moment spare, which, to be fair, is actually one of the highlight points of it all for me, is I didn't get as much gaming done as I thought because there were so much other things to be doing with lore seminars and narrative games. I didn't actually get as many pick-up and arena games as I was expecting.
As I've said to people, the entire first day, I did nothing but paint-related stuff, and I don't have a problem with that. I had a great fun time. So the first day, I went in and had a session on painting Undead Skin with Matt Hart, which was actually really, really good. Because, I mean, you know, I have one method for paint... Well, two methods for painting skin. One is put on Cardic Flesh and then highlight a little bit with something like Rin or Midland. Call it done. And maybe put a flesh washer over the top if I'm feeling fancy. And the other method I have is paint it sort of whitey cream and put on... Army Painter Peachy Flesh, which is a speed paint. So, sort of gets the job done. But no, Matt Hart was talking all about kind of like what effectively is the basis for sponge chop. Never used a sponge before for painting, never done anything like that.
It's quite nice.
And he brought out one of the new Fane of Nero models for everyone and said, okay, this is just black undercoated. I'm going to teach you, by the end of this lesson, you're going to have a fully painted model and we're going to go from there. And I was really surprised by how easy it was to come up with a model that not only looked like it had a good coating on over black with pale colours, which I thought that was going to be tricky, but then also to have baked in shading with what you're doing and be able to highlight it really easily just by picking what Matt called the hero angle and saying, okay, where do you think the light should be coming from on this model? Okay, put more, use the sponge more there in that line. Yeah. Also, the first time I experimented with doing some absolutely wacky shading colours, which I thought, nah, this shouldn't work. This is.
I mean, like contrasting colours.
I've always
using a contrasting colour kind of thing.
Yeah, I've always seen that thing of, like, oh, if you're going to paint a green, then your shadow should be in sanguine base, and in my head,
yeah,
that's never worked.
Ninjon's good for that kind of stuff. I quite like him for that kind of yeah.
Well, what I had was, I think it was was it beaten purple? I think it was one of the purples. Verging more on blue, and one of the reds, and just kind of using that sort of blue purple as the base, and building up the red on top of it with the sponge, and going, oh, that's how this works. That felt just utter insanity to me. But now I've done it, it's like, oh, this makes sense. So much so that when we go to any other business, I'll talk about some stuff I've done since. But yeah, so start the day, just, you know, get that Undead Flesh tutorial done. Then with Mikey from Hellstorm Wargaming did a basing session, which a lot of it was products that I already used, but then there were some of the bits on top. Did a kind of an undead base for that model, all good. And then the rest of the day went to the paint and take, where I basically sat there for 2 hours with like some people from Finland, some people from Germany, France, America, a couple of Brits, and we're just all sat there with our models just kind of just painting away and having a chat for several hours. And it's one of the best, one of the most fun things I've ever done at a wargaming convention. So I could have rocked up with an entire army. I've just slowly gone through it over the weekend, talking to people, because it's just good fun.
I remember doing that. I remember enjoying that at SmogCon a lot as well. SmogCon, sat at the painting table quite a long time.
Yeah. So I picked up Prisoner on the day from the paint and take, and had that finished in a couple of hours. And again, I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to use different colours with the sponge. And yeah. Managed to come up with a nicely finished model by the end of the day. I mean, minus the basing, but I've done most of that now. Yeah, it was all good fun. I was expecting far less from the room where they did the painting tutorials, because I thought, oh, it'll just be somewhere with like neon lights overhead and you'll have the world's worst brush. And no, they've got full on setup with double LED lamps for every station. You did have a bad brush and they'd said bring your own, so whatever. But you'd also got like a wet palette for everyone, a water cup with one of those special things at the bottom where you use it to actually draw the paint at the bristles of the brush, which is quite good. And then the person who was leading the painting session also had a camera aimed at their desk so that you could actually see from anywhere in the, well, allegedly see from anywhere in the room what they were doing. So I will say that the setup was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
No, the whole thing was an amazing surprise in effort put in by SFG. All the tables had 3D terrain, every single one of them. It was all painted. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, and there were a lot of tables there. Yeah,
I really liked the narrative table.
Yeah. Just about to go there.
It's just
with the train that was traveling from one end to the other.
Yeah, and the whole thing looked epic from end to end. That was because that's where you started day one with the painting. I started day one with the narrative game, and that was a laugh, a lot of laugh. And I mean, we'll get back round to this a bit later, but we had 7 or 8 players each side, and I took my Orgoth, because Orgoth haven't won a whole lot on the narrative side. They're not doing consequences from the narrative games anymore, which is a shame. But playing into a selection of Signar players, out of 7 or 8 players, we had at least 6 Kane up and down the board.
Oh my God.
Mildly terrifying.
Yeah, no, that's... No. No.
I mean, you know, I like... You know, I can't entirely be, you know, I'm sorry to hear that, but not. I have a weird contradiction. I have a weird duality with Signar.
And you will explain no further and move on.
Yes. Well, I like Kane. I like Gun Mages. I'm not proud to play Signar. I enjoy some of the Signar, but it's a conflict. What can we say? Mark II Haley, I think.
Oh.
See, when you edit this, Mike, though, and you chop out the silence, that won't make any sense.
I have to make sure to leave that in, aren't I?
You really should leave the silence in for that one.
Maybe lengthen it by 5 seconds.
4 hours.
only in the special edition.
Why stop talking? Right, just what he does. I'm known for just stopping talking, obviously.
Kurt, stopping talking, that's unheard of. I'm sorry.
Do you like that? Do you like that?
Madness. So yeah, we have the narrative game in the middle, Dom. What was on after that for you? I can't remember.
After the narrative game, I got some pickup games that afternoon. Then day two, I did.
Wasn't day one where we had the preview?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was in the evening.
Yeah,
I think everyone attended that.
Yeah. So I will say I'm just going to get this one off my chest now. That seating is the least comfortable I think I've ever been. It was so bad. There's no back support, and you're basically sitting on a plank for...
I wonder if that had something to do with it. So from a remote viewer, it did not sound like there were very many people in the audience.
Oh!
Whether that's because you were all uncomfortable.
Oh, so there were... Traditionally, they never mic up the crowd at these things. It's always a problem. But there were effectively bleachers going back, 15, 20 rows?
Wow.
Something like that.
Yeah, and you've got a good, let's say, on average, 10 people per row, and you've got overspill to the side as well.
Like, and there was a bunch of people sat on the floor when the seating ran out.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, it wasn't a small room, but there were a lot of people watching that keynote for War Machine. So it was very interesting, and there was a kind of a good Q&A segment that happened off air, obviously after the events of the preview. I genuinely wasn't expecting to just go through and go, and here's the fate of Nero. By the way, all the rules will be in there after this event. Like, oh, okay, fantastic, that's nice. I was expecting a couple of meaty previews, a new Menoth model, and then a, right, you've had your stuff, off you pop. No, there was a lot more than that. Even got told what the Umbre 80mm super heavy is, and that's exciting. It didn't get a cheer at the time because I don't think anyone quite believed Jamie P when he said what it was. So if anyone doesn't know, because I think it's spread far and wide throughout the internet at this point, the 80mm for Umbre is some version of Draeger.
I see. I didn't believe that. I had heard that, but I didn't believe it.
Yes. Well, we know Draeger's out there because in the stories involving Sorcia, like, Draeger was being maintained and just relit his own boiler and off he went in search of, murders. To be clear, I think they did say it's not purely Draeger or not quite the Draeger we know.
Well,
there has to be something involving it working with Fury.
Yeah, so I queried Jamie about this on the Saturday. I just asked him, how does Draeger use Fury? And he started off by going, well, that's too much of an ask. I can't answer that. Which I think is the first time Jamie has ever backed down from leaking something. But he did say, if you consider a Cortex, and especially a character, Warjack, gets imprinted with a personality, imagine taking that a step further and have something inhabit the Cortex or almost possess it.
Badger.
You could say that something was wearing Draeger like a suit of armour.
Mm-hmm.
To which...
A suit of armour with very big shoulder pads, perhaps.
Yes, that's my first thought as well, is this Vlad? Is this Vlad coming to look out for his heir?
Well, I mean, we've seen Stranger Things before. We had what's his face Stryker coming back as an Archon, So it wouldn't be unheard of. And it did. Draeger did come back purely to defend Vlad's kid. So it's a very good shout. I'm excited to see what this turns into, because like, I didn't use Draeger a lot in Mark 2 and Mark 3, but it was always a jet that, like, it had a lot of character. You wanted to see it on the table. It just wasn't necessarily very good. And I think as an 80mm centerpiece model, I think SFG will give it some crazy nice rules, and we'll possibly see it, you know, decently often. But hey, who knows?
I can't wait.
It sounds and looks good.
Doesn't really sound like your thing, Dom. Doesn't sound like your kind of jam.
I tell you what, I wasn't expecting to be my kind of jam is Nero.
I was surprised at that.
I mean, as you well know, I quite like cast of who lead from the front, Lord Butchers, and really super solo anchor models who can just win the battle themselves.
Like Kane. And then, you like Kane, obviously.
No, absolutely not like Kane. But listening to the preview and hearing them talk about how the whole faction of Nero is this idea of lead from the front really caught my attention. And I might have another army now.
Oh, dear. Oh, Dom.
Just buy all the armies.
Oh, that is the problem with Mark IV. Because you get this nice, self-contained army that you can buy out to a certain point, you're like, ah, this army, I think I'm complete. But wait, there's another.
There is always one more.
Yeah, it's not like 40K, where you could legitimately just keep buying Space Marines until the end of time and still not have them all.
I have not pre-ordered the 11th edition army box. Not. not for the first time in how many editions? Quite a few.
Yeah, I mean, I have from my local place.
I have enough painted Space Marines. They're painted. They're done. Like there are some that I haven't, but I've got tons of painted Marines. I don't need more. I don't want to get into Orcs again. Done that. Not doing it again.
So, the Thane of Nero have a new unique mechanic. Their unique gimmick is hunger. As you play the game, you build up hunger points. You start with 3. You build up more through different methods. Different rules have different ways of gaining and attaining hunger. And then you've got the Warlock has, the only one we've got so far, I've seen, has 3 effects with different costs that are usable by, for her abilities at least, other Eldritch models in the faction. But every Nero model also gains Shadow Shift, which is the rule that lets them play so well from the front. For 3 hunger points, if you are directly hit by an enemy attack after it's been resolved, so you have to tank the hit, you can spend your 3 hunger points to teleport to a model space to base with, to a model within 4 inches, and then you remove from play the one that you teleported to. So you eat your own guys, but every model in the faction has this 4-inch teleport away, as long as you've got the hunger to pay for it, which makes things insanely survivable, allowing them to be up at the front and threaten like this.
Yeah, it's this whole idea of having these kind of like super powerful things up at the front, but they are just feeding off the stuff in the back lines. It's not quite like, you know, the army is there to do the work and the cast is supporting. It's very much kind of almost a role reversal for War Machine.
It kind of sounds a bit like Krix, or at least like the Winter Guard. Like the mechanic sounds like a variation on survivable stuff that's gone before.
How often do you have to watch Underworld when you're playing this army?
All the time. You have to have it on at least 2 screens while you're painting. Nice. The other reversal.
That's a lot.
The other reversal is that the War Beasts, including the Heavies, are not your primary damage dealers. They are all, to one extent or another, support models. The Heavy topped out at... Oh, hang on a minute, let's just open the tabs.
I mean, it tops at 11 points for a start. Let's just throw that one out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll start there. It tops out at 11 points, but for melee attacks, it's got either 13 or power 13 or power 15. Generally, you can have a power 18, but you only get that once per round. It's got the single shot rule.
Yeah.
So these heavies are not hard hitting. They are there to help generate the hunger, just so that your other models can then capitalize. And I've only played a couple of games with them, but you really do have several turns of build up, winding up for your big punch, and then you smash hard. As an illustration, the big spender for 7 hunger, an Eldritch model can gain decapitation on their next melee attack. And this is on the other big punchy model in the command box that's released at the event is a cavalry model with an armor-piercing power 10 who you can give Storm Rager to. So armor piercing power 12 with decapitation. That's going to obliterate something.
Owie.
Mm-hmm.
That also sounds a lot like old. I was going to say,
isn't the decap only on High Scene, not on the Strygon?
No. The decap is the hunger ability, which is on High Scene's model, but.
Yes, because it's friendly.
High Scene and friendly faction Eldritch models have these hunger abilities.
Oh, that's
so
horrible.
Everyone in the army, or every Eldritch model, can gain the decap.
I hate it so much.
The other ones, you can buy, essentially, with hunger, buy yourself a cleave, where if you destroy one enemy model, you get another attack for 2 hunger. You can spend a hunger point in the maintenance phase to remove all shakeable and continuous effects.
It does remind me of old Circle Orberus, like alpha striking with fragile beasts that then dance away. It does sound.
It's going to be interesting to see how much that plays out. There is, I mean, we've only got a very small snippet of the army so far.
I mean, we've got one box look, worth, effectively.
Yeah. Which, actually, if we want to talk about the box of a slight diversion, the command box, as with all the others, is 30 points. But outside of your leader model and the character war beast, everything else is FA 2 or 4. Mm. So there is actually mileage in getting two of the command boxes for probably the first time ever.
Well, they have actually said that they're going with a new release strategy for Nero,
yes,
which was interesting, where you have, rather than kind of this is your base set of troopers, this is your extended support stuff, it's very much more, okay, here's a caster and the 30 points they would like to take.
Yes.
Which is a really interesting and different model, particularly because that's the entry point for journeymen. So
that is a terrific journeyman list.
Yeah, yeah. You walk up, you pick up that box, you can walk straight into a journeyman league the next day. Oh, right, you've glued it together. And you are then, golden.
Yeah, absolutely. But then the other army boxes are changed as well. No longer is the here is your core box, here is your auxiliary box. Every army box, I think they're going to have three.
Yeah, I think three more.
They are 50-point army each, designed around the leader, and there will, I think, mainly for the support staff, but there will be some overlap between boxes. So this is the thing that I've got a bit more caution about, because buying two of the command boxes up front, I've now got all of my Strygon Riders, they're FA2, I don't need any more. If they appear in any of the other armor boxes, that devalues that box. And so knowing that there's going to be duplicates across the rest of the boxes, I kind of want to know what's in all of them before I decide which ones I want to double up on, just to take advantage of the effective cost reduction for having the models all bundled together.
I will say this has been a general problem with War Machine in this edition. I mean, you are speaking to the man who's got three Heliths at the moment. do I need three Heliths? No. Do I have them? Or, yes. There's nothing I can do except use one of the... There's a test model for painting. That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
So... And you've gone and got the other boxes where, like, oh, I want two of this unit. Well, you're going to end up with two of this character jack then.
Yeah.
Unless you buy units direct.
Which, if you look at the price of them, you might as well just buy the box.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing also worth mentioning is these 50-point army boxes are going to have the heavy and light beasts in them, but only a single loadout per box. Not all of the arms. If you want all of the arms, you need to buy the beast in its own breakout box, or find someone with a 3D printer who will print you out the additional when they become available on the subscription service.
Yeah. I mean, I have a suspicion about what will happen with the multi-part beasts and warjacks in the next edition, in that you will have, rather than full access to everything that they have, you'll pick from like one of three or four standard loadouts, which I think would probably lead to a slightly more easy to balance game as well. But it does seem that SFG is less supportive of the completely magnetized, completely customizable War Beast and Warjack than PP were intending to be. Particularly when you look at things particularly when you look at things that have come out like the Avalanche, for instance. Or Borealis, which were they could have been released as extra bits to the chassis.
Extra bits. True. I think the 3D printing is the balance to that, wasn't it? I think the 3D printing kind of extra funky arms or alternate kind of themed arms, that's the counter to that. So yes, you could do that, but you could also print the arms.
True.
I think the example of Avalanche and Borealis are possibly not great. Can't remember the exact timeline, but it was close enough that they will have been developed under PP.
Yeah, true,
and
true.
SFG shipped out.
Also, they're the only ones, aren't they? Nobody else has got them.
Let's face it, who's using an Avalanche? They're terrible. Please don't.
To be honest, I'm not a massive fan of magnets, especially with the fact that when they fall off, now they tend to break due to the materials that they're made out of. Any small drop, we'll usually see any resin printed thing like Bracken become very annoying and having to be pinned.
For Kador, I've been very much on board with the multi-part philosophy. There's been it's a good set of warjacks. There's a decent variety of heads and limbs that you can take. That's fine. As a warjack I'll talk about later, that because of the multi-partness becomes so fiddly to pick up, I just don't want to at this point.
I will say also that as time's gone on, the resin mixes they're using have got a lot more robust,
yes,
and less fragile than the initial waves. The problem is that there is a lot of boxes from the initial wave still lingering in the supply chain.
Having bought first wave Signar, that was a trying time. That was a while ago when I broke so many. But then also buying Trolls and Chimera, they were much, much better. I mean, it's a different type of model, different sort of different shapes. But then, in contrast to that, as I have posted in the chat, in the Elite Cadre chat, I don't know. I was very enthusiastic about printing my own army and getting on the frontier and printing my own army. That has been a completely different frustration. The breakages, the misprints of it gives you a taste of what it's like to actually try and print an army, print models commercially. If you're trying to print a whole army for yourself, I'm printing PLA, I'm printing filament, not resin, but I've had challenges, especially with the deadline of trying to get painted, which is what I'm doing right now, painted for the Welsh, not even painted for a event on Sunday. It's been trying. It's definitely dented my enthusiasm for the hobby part of this game. I'm sure that I'll return, but I like the idea of going, I can print armies, I can do this, I can do that. I don't have to spend as much money on toy soldiers that I want to paint, because I paint a lot. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. Maybe without a deadline, which Dom has said, maybe without a deadline, it won't be quite so bad. I'll enjoy it more. Don't know. It's definitely been trying. Things break. You drop. As I was pointing out to that on the chat when I posted about it, I dropped a model recently, a heavy infantry model, which had thin piece in the middle of the arm, big hands, chunky body, and snapped the arm off. Now, it's big enough that I drilled it and pinned it rather than print another one. You can print another one, but that takes hours, It's the time sink. There's a personal time sink and an effort. It's been interesting. I was really, really excited over that side of the hobby developing, and I think it still will, but I've learned a lesson. You cannot print, and I can't print an army under time pressure and get it painted for an event. It's got a different level of personal stress.
As I said, quite a while ago with regard to 3D printers, they're a bit like an airbrush in that you buy one to help with your hobbying. However, when you buy one, you gain a second hobby, which is fixing all the problems that occur with the thing that you bought to help you with your hobby.
Too right.
The amount of time...
Yeah, you're not wrong.
The amount of time that I spend cleaning, stripping, and just ferreting about in the inside of an airbrush is absolutely insane. But it does still overall save me time on doing things like base coats. Because...
I don't own an airbrush. I've never bought one.
I mean, I suppose if you're happy with the speed that you're going, you do go at a pace. Carry on. Like, you're not going to gain anything from an airbrush that you don't already have. But for someone like me, who spends an age on base coats and just nearly threw Colossals in the bin as a result...
I don't have the time or inclination to use an airbrush, even though it would help me in other hobbies, like Gunpla painting.
But, I mean, this is the thing, Benj. you've just painted a Colossal.
Mm-hmm.
You've just painted Mastodon. There is no physical way that you could put the base coat on that of whatever colour you did on faster than you would with an airbrush, even clearing the jams.
Well, I was using rattle cans, and I got my undercoat and base coat on fine, I guess.
That's not a base coat. That's undercoating twice.
Okay.
Twice.
You have visible undercoat. You are disqualified. Out. Get out.
you can say that with my Camaro as well, to be honest.
Take it to the Welsh, I will smash it on the floor and tell you to leave.
Aww.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, that is a tactic, and I certainly don't have models that have visible undercoat that I've disguised as actual paint. But that's a side point.
I think that's an opinion, not a fact.
Yeah, that seems a bit anal.
It was a long-standing thing for years that visible undercoat was enough to disqualify.
But what is visible undercoat? Because
you mean primer, don't you? You mean primer?
Yeah.
But then in this age of coloured primers or coloured
how can you
spray,
tell?
What's the difference?
Oh, yeah. No, I get where you're coming from.
But he stands by his point.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't care.
I feel your pain, Kurt, with the printing. It's not something I've tried yet, but as a segue to... back on topic, they also announced that after Faro will be, or Q4 this year at least, will be Blackfleet coming back as a digital army.
Yes, but that was interesting.
This is not just your, here is a legacy army and have the models and have fun. This is a ground-up rework, more than what they did for Grimkin or the other Frontier armies that got varying degrees of touch-up. They were quite insistent that this is a Mark IV reimagining of Blackfleet. So
it's almost like there's somebody senior at SFG likes Cricks.
Yeah, weird that, isn't it?
Yeah. But I am very interested in printing myself a Blackfleet army. I will be feeling your pain.
And like, primary change is that, like, you know, you've got, and you'll have a new Warcaster in Rengrave, which that's. I mean, Rengrave's been around forever, but
yeah,
being promoted to Warcaster, that's interesting.
I just hope I still get to have the 128mm Scar on a boat.
Oh, God. Nice.
Is it not Scar that's also the other Warcaster? Or is it a new Scar?
Scar is one of the Warcasters. I would be willing to bet that what they'll do is they'll make it a Scar 4, 5, whatever, yes. And it'll be like a best of selection. You know, they'll go through all the things that the other Scars had and go, well, I've one of those, one of those, one of those.
A thematic boat ship base that you can put on half boat.
Does anyone own the boat here?
Nope.
No.
I always thought it was a really silly model, but who am I?
It looks cool on the table.
I mean, if you're going to say it looks like a really silly model, that does apply to an awful lot of war machines.
No. Everything I paint is practical.
Super serious.
Super serial.
It definitely nice. Seems that way. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Welcome to Elite Cadre or something.
I don't know, but how silly do you want to get? Like... I was always accepting of trolls and how silly they looked.
Wow, we're gonna go there, are we?
No, I like trolls. They fill a niche.
I mean, if you want to talk silly, you go to the mercenary section of the War Machine app, start scrolling down to the solos, and start going, oh no, oh no, because that place is a holding pen for all the greatest mistakes that were ever made about War Machine. There's some great stuff in there as well. Some very thematic stuff. But, like, did we really need Balthazar Bamfist? Did we?
I mean, I think that's commentary on Riot Quest more than
it absolutely
anything
is.
Else.
The Storm Knight who, quote, skipped leg day?
And a pig on a bicycle, on a motorbike.
Yeah, I get what they were going for. I think.
Do you get what they were going for? Riot Quest.
Get that what they were going for. They were going for something more out there, so that it was more approachable. something that was more skirmish level than War Machine had become. And they pushed it way too far. Put it in a place where very few people actually wanted to follow. I don't know what the sales figures were like for Riot Quest. I cannot imagine that they were outside of buying those solos for mercs.
I think that the sales figures were practically inflated for what they were expecting, because they used the War Machine rules as a way to push people to buy Riot Quest. So I suppose they had the idea that it would reach a critical mass of, oh, people's got these models, so they will use them in Riot Quest and the game will take off. But instead they just printed broken rules for Riot Quest models that people couldn't do without, and the Riot Quest cards were in the bin first, out the packaging. And that was that.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the absolute mass of Merc solos. It's just... Oh, I mean, you've got classics like Dahlia, Halir, and Scarath, Brunn and Lug.
You have to give it to BP. They really did try to enter as many fields as possible, like collectible card games. And
you can't fault them for that, because at some point in growth, you have to diversify. But the problem was, they were diversifying their games, but still marketing it to the same demographic and the same customers. They weren't going out of their way to get new customers so that if one game failed, it would be propped up. They would have alternate revenue streams. They were just selling everything to the same customers again and again.
Yeah.
But it also felt like they didn't really ever... Like, the initial idea, fantastic, and then they didn't really ever think that far ahead, or it was left to its own devices and then eventually died. Like, I'm mostly looking at the card game, which I cannot remember the title of.
High Command.
I enjoyed that.
High Command was
a
really good game. I have a complete set of High Command, all sleeved in the right colours, although I'm still annoyed that the Devastator has the incorrect rules print on it, so it's basically slightly unplayable. But yeah, High Command.
I enjoyed it. I've got loads of it.
Yeah.
It's
Was it the Merc and Ret version that they did at the end?
But like Dom said, it didn't market beyond their initial base, and they didn't take into consideration that wider market, basically. They just threw out
that's what Monpok was for. And they went through a tremendous problem with that one. It got licensed for the movie and got caught in licensing hell for a while, so they couldn't really do anything with it as a property. Which, given that was PP's backbone second game, if you counted War Machine and Hordes as one game.
Well, they also had that.
I enjoyed Warpock.
They also had that sci-fi board game.
Level 7.
I have a copy of Level 7 right here. It's only been played once, and it was not by me. It was, in fact, I know. I think it was Matt Hart who played it and said it was so bad he put it in the raffle for the Welsh the day after buying it.
Wow.
So there you go. That's why I have a copy of Level 7. I don't think it's moved since it came back from the Welsh. Actually, it's been on that shelf for a good 10 years. But yes, should we go back to the rest of Lock and Load?
Yeah.
Having diverted off it immensely for several minutes. We had the preview, we had the Q&A after, which was actually, I was expecting that to be about 10 minutes and be very cagey. It was not 10 minutes, very cagey. It was 45 minutes, and we got some actually decent answers on a lot of it, which is pretty good. Day two, when I went in, I had signed up for basically nothing, turned up, and was kind of in the area while Russ was setting up a Frontlines event. Yeah, it was Frontlines. I was like, do you want to play? I can do 30 points, hang on. Had a fun couple of games of Frontlines. Was it 30 points? I can't remember.
I also joined that one, and I played 50 points against the man himself, Mr. Ross.
Yeah, no, it's 50 points with the frontline scenarios, and they were just very quick games. One of which was, I think, against Signar, where my opponent learned halfway through the game. It's like, oh, Hand of Destruction's not a control area spell I cast on myself. It's something I have to cast on you. At which point I went, don't worry about it. I mean, he destroyed one of my jacks, so it was fine. But it's like, don't worry about it. I move Vilkul forward, you die. So, you know, he apologized enough. I was like, don't worry, I'll just kill you. It's fine. And the other game was walking into a wall of Orgoth chunk that was like, oh dear, no, I don't want to face this. But very fun games, nice atmosphere. Had a great old time.
I've not looked at the Frontier stuff before then, but actually that's really enjoyable, and I need to play more of it. But as I said, I got to play against Russ, and lovely chap. I think I'd met him briefly once at one of the small cons. I know he's a good friend of Kurt's, but he managed to get an assassination on me, and then we rewound it the turn and played on, and I got the assassination on him. And then that was perfect timing for me to carry on to the law seminar.
Oh, nice.
The State of the Iron Kingdoms, which was a really fun session with Sherwin, just going through all the different factions, nations, and what they're up to, where they're at, and trying to discern hints and nuggets for each development. I think the most prominent one that he seeded was that right in the middle of rule is a marker for a cephalic scythe, and he just very ominously said that, as ever, the dwarves have dug too deep and watch this space. So,
oh no,
something will be happening there.
They did say they hadn't finished with cephalics, didn't they?
Yeah,
I think cephalics is one of those factions that's it's too much fun as a designer not to go back to, because they seem to have quite enjoyed their little dabbling, going, ooh, but what if we had a unit here? Ooh, what if we had an 80mm mercenary over here? Ooh, what if we did this as well?
They've been so slow in their growth from the beginning. We first saw them in the role RPG, and I never played the RPG, but I saw them in the RPG and was like, whoa. And then you gradually get bits and pieces and hints and stuff, and we finally get models, and I do like the really slow growth.
They were in there from Mark 1 as an ally unit, back when ally unit meant nothing. But you only had that three-man unit?
I can't walk in first. Yeah, well, you might be right.
Yeah, there's
a support unit.
There's not a support unit. That was they were the ones with the Isle of Sight sprays that did psychic horribleness. They were absolutely fundamentally awful. I know this because Dave Payton used to play, I think it was three units of them at a time. I was like, you cannot hide. You can be behind a wall, behind a building, whatever. These ridiculous power sprays are just coming for you. It was horrific. But yeah, seeing them go for that one unit, and then kind of closer to the end of Mark II, you kind of get a few drips and drabs of other stuff, and then they were the first limited faction, weren't they?
Yeah, I was going to say, you can absolutely see them being the template for the limited factions that came through, well, the end of Mark II through Mark III, and ultimately where we're at now in Mark IV.
Yeah.
I can't remember that many people playing them when they did come out as a limited faction. And the only other thing I can remember about them was the key art for the faction had to be changed because they were dominating a precursor knight, which couldn't be dominated. So then they changed it to a sword knight, which I found really funny.
Yeah.
Just out of,
I think initially the reason you didn't see a whole lot of them is because they were this trial run at a limited faction. They were mercenaries, but they didn't work with anything else. You had to, it was very self-contained, but still within the mercs.
I thought they were a Crix kind of like addition.
Ally. Yeah. So you had a Crix ally unit in the Mind Benders.
That's right. Yeah. I think. That's right. I could grab it.
And then I think there were some Drudges that came out a little bit later.
Yeah.
But still wasn't a huge amount of stuff. It was like one UA, two units, not much. But then you started...
There was more in the RPG, so we knew what was going to happen. We're sort of poring over... I had a mate who had RPGs. We did spend an evening sort of poring over it, going, speculating what would come out later. And it's tons of it was in the RPG for absolutely ages before it actually came out.
And eventually you ended up with, at the same point that everyone else got those weird UAs that turned mercenaries into friendly faction... You had the ones for Cephalic that dominated units.
Yeah, so you could have dominated, what was it, the hammer dudes, the hammer dwarfs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Anything, it was loads of stuff, wasn't it? Other mercenary units, you're right. That was horrible with the dwarfs.
Yeah, that was a really weird phase of War Machine where they went, maybe if we had a Kador attachment for a Merc unit that turned them friendly faction, like, you do not know what you are doing to the balance of this game, please stop. I think the worst one was the Signar one that gave go to ground. So you could take the Nis and give them +4 defense and immunity from blast return. Like, no, this is not acceptable.
Oh, that's nice.
Like, that's the one way of dealing with them. Please stop. So, but yes, we're talking about the law seminar with the dwarves digging too deep.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that session. What else did they mention? That was the other one that, I mean, not game impacting, but interesting from a lore perspective, was that actually Signar benefited from the Infernal Invasion. Beforehand, it was all very birthright, noble-based hierarchy in Signar. But actually, with all the destruction from the Infernal Invasion and the claiming, that actually Signar is now transitioned to a meritocracy and flourished because people are actually being rewarded for being skilled rather than just being the son of whatever noble.
I mean, it's part of that slow march to modernity that the entire Iron Kingdoms has done.
So what you're saying is Signar are the good guys now?
Signar were never the good guys.
I mean, in a world where nobody was particularly nice.
They were the poster child.
Yeah.
Striker was there to do all the good boy things.
Good guys.
So
Trolls were the only good guys.
I mean, what with the eating of humans, yes. I joke. It's not quite 40K. It's like, everyone is evil. Hooray! It's like, everyone's more just like... just a bit bad, but
everyone's shades of grey.
Yeah, mostly they're just trying to get along.
Trying to get by.
Any news on Lael or anything like that? I guess that conflict's kind of not really.
Lael was quite happy until the Orgoth arrived.
That's interesting because the Orgoth are very far west of them, as I recall.
Oh shit! Sorry, I was thinking of Ord. Yes. Ord is almost non-existent now.
Ord and Five Fingers got trampled. Who knows?
Five Fingers is holding out. Ord has lost its capital and is 3/4 under a Sea of Orgoth. Lael, what did they say about Lael? I think they said they were just kind of keeping to themselves, but they didn't have to worry about Kador anymore because they had bigger problems.
Yeah, I can't imagine Lael kind of being relevant at this point because they lost a bit of territory to Kador, which is where the Horse Lords are. They're suspiciously quiet. And
they're still coming.
Sorry, go on.
I was just commenting that the Horse Lords have been quiet, but they're still coming.
Oh, I mean, yes. I mean, they were asked about that, and it's like, well, yeah, no. I've recently had a look at them. I'm like, Matt Hart, if you do not tell me about the Horse Lords at this point, I'm going to start shaking you because it's driving me insane. I just want Kador, non-bear Kador Cav, okay? Just give me some Ulans, a Draken. Fenris, I'll take Fenris at this point. Just, the only horses we have are the Bisons and Behemoth 2, which are, we'd also have the Bunny now, I think.
Did you get the bunny? I know it's in Ombre. I don't know if it's in WK.
I believe it got added to Wintercourt. I will check for you now.
I thought it was Wintercourt. I thought it was Ombre it got added to.
Yeah, it was a Chaos, the Winter's Chill.
It's your
no.
I don't have much of a reason to take it, to be honest. But it's nice that it's there.
Not a bear.
No, it's not a bear. Or a tracked vehicle. Which, don't get me wrong, I do enjoy the tracked vehicles. Like, putting the bison on the table, even though it's been nerfed, that is still a good time. That's a fun piece to play with. I love it. Just because you get the ability to go, no, that's a solo. It's like, oh, okay, I do extra damage to constructs. I'm not a construct. Oh, why?
This obviously is.
What are you then? A horse.
I had more than a couple of gotchas where this tank is actually a warrior model.
Yeah.
Really?
Fuck off.
Yes, he's a living warrior model.
Fuck off.
Yep, it's also steady, sturdy, and provides cover. Just like this list of stuff that people forget about that you then go, yeah, it does things. By the way, it's got a power 15 main gun. Kaboom. Not with as many accuracy fixes these days, but to be honest, you know, it's fine. It'll do. Going back to Lock and Load, what I will say is, for most of the rest of Saturday, what I did was sat around talking to people. I watched games and I chatted with people, and that was basically it. I did not play an awful lot of War Machine. I talked an awful lot of War Machine. I had a great time, but I did not do an awful lot of playing games.
I did one of the Sculpting seminars with Russ, watching him convert Bagdy Bomb into Kithgard flavored using their digital asset library of everything Kithgard, which was fun, and just chatting about how he goes about sculpting and essentially machining, I guess, for plastics or other materials. And that was just a really fun session. However, after that, I retreated back to the hotel because after two very late nights in a row, knowing that I needed to drive home on Sunday, so I should probably get some rest.
Yeah. What I will say, I mean, this is the thing, though. Like, experiencing that much people in general for one or two days, it doesn't sound exhausting. Oh boy, it really is. It's a lot of mental energy that's put into stuff. And also, I will say this, because there's no hotel room you can just like take a lift up to and have like 10 minutes away from the floor. I find it a lot more exhausting, personally.
This is and was my one resounding piece of feedback for the event, is that everything was amazing, but I really miss having on-site accommodation. For the reasons you've just mentioned, yeah. For going back to your discussion on bar prices, I hadn't even looked at the bar prices, because if I've got to drive back to my hotel, why am I going to be looking at having a drink?
I was only using it for soft drinks.
Oh, I just went and nabbed them for free water, because why not?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
But there is so much added benefit to having that on-site affair, and I would have probably gained further into the evening on the Saturday if I could have gone to the hotel, to the room, to rest without needing to... I think it's a short drive, 10 minutes or less, 5 minutes to my travel lodge, but it's just one extra barrier to having a short rest and then coming back for more.
You've then got to get back in the car, haven't you, to come back? That's more the thing, isn't
yeah.
it? It's not the going back, going home, going to the hotel, easy. It's the then getting up again and going back. It's not just walking, not just going and stumbling into the lift downstairs again. You've got to, yeah, I know from, yeah,
both ends. Also, the hall itself was not near the entrance to the venue.
I was about to say, we'd not touched on this, but it was easily, without exaggeration, a 3 or 4 minute walk from the main entrance to get to the hall.
Wow.
Yeah. Especially on the first day where they put the signs out and they were wrong. Which, well, no, not wrong. I think it was the direction they'd been told to go. But I know from the second day onwards, rather than follow those signs, I was told, just go through the cafe.
Yeah, there's a shortcut.
Yeah, because you went in, and there's a sign to go to the right, and you went back, and you went around, and you went through this like weird double-story bit where they got War Machine up on the screens, and you could just cut through the cafe and miss three quarters of it out. It still wasn't a short walk, but it was like... it's enough that you don't want to... If you forget something, you don't want to go back to the car for it. It's dead.
Absolutely. I had dreams and visions of... I had several different armies in the boot of my car, and I would change them out through the day as my whim desired. And no, I just played the same damn thing all day because that was a trek. And as light as the armies are now compared to the metal armies in the past, my arms were not cut out for carrying my cases that far for that long.
What I will say is on day two, I got out the little truck that's in the back of my car. I was like, oh, this perfectly fits two army cases. There we go.
That is top of my list for next year because I have heard, whether it's people who have knowledge of Massive or if it's just pessimism, but when I voiced my feedback about on-site accommodation, I was met with a resounding, it's Magna again next year.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it is Magna again next year. I think that's pretty much been confirmed. The dates haven't been, which probably should be.
Definitely.
Just saying, if you know where your venue is, then you've already booked it. Announce your dates as early as possible. I'm not saying, I need to book my hotel now. It's more... the earlier you can do it, the more people can book their holiday around these things and more people can come. So, I mean, overall, the walk to and fro is a minor issue. It's solvable by means of having like either a little truck or just knowing that you need to ferry everything you want to in there at the same time. And I think the event itself overall was good enough that wasn't, for that to be the major problem is pretty low down the list of like things that could have gone wrong. So
absolutely, the complaints aside, I'm absolutely planning to attend next year, hands down. I had a good time. It was a good weekend. I felt I got value for money on what I got out of it with all the seminars and sessions and the effort they put in to the tables with the terrain and everything. Absolutely amazing. And I mean, there's a couple of other bits we've not mentioned yet, but the having the confidence to actually open up a proper playtest session to the masses, amazing. And it wasn't dumbed down. It was a proper, these are rules for tests and this is where we're at with it. What do you reckon? Have a game, do something. And I can't say any more than that because of NDA. Secrecy reasons, but the confidence that they felt that they could do that is it's the first time I've seen something like that done. Another standout thing for me was they had their virtual reality stand, which absolutely was not what I was expecting. I was expecting some kind of tabletop simulator-esque affair, but it was a proper full augmented reality. You sit with a table in front of you and your own models, and you see your opponent's models as holograms, in effect, on the table, as they see your models as holograms. And so it's still very much reducing
So, so the idea is you could sit in your house at your table, I could sit in my house at my table, we could play War Machine with headsets on and see each other's kind of models, but without actually driving an hour, so to speak.
Yeah. Exactly. It is telepresence rather than a video game.
Wow. Didn't you see the demo that they had it at UK Game Expo?
I didn't look at it. I saw it. I made assumptions about it and didn't look at it. I also have my children with me, so.
Okay.
I've heard good things about it of people who don't play War Machine. That's the kind of level it's at.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this for the people designing it and making the app, it's got applications for all war games, but I was chatting to the people, because I think it's essentially a two-man band who are making it at the moment, and they've got the deal and agreement with Steamforge for War Machine that it will hook into the app. It will pull up your army list, your opponent's army list, and it just adds an augmented reality overlay to what you see on the table. So you see your models, you see your opponent's models, and you would see like the health box above a warjack to show you exactly what's what, or status effects.
Very cool.
You could click on the warjack with your finger and it would show you the rules for that model. But still at the core of it, you're playing with your models against someone else playing with their models.
Yeah, it's kind of like several steps above something like...
War Table. Or...
Yes, War Table. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that's what it was. I like that. I like that idea. I would at some point be keen to have a look at that.
Yeah, I think they were getting a lot of very positive feedback, but it's at the moment it is that first step of getting past the assumptions and potential misconceptions for people who think they know what it is.
Or just dismiss it, what that is. Don't understand how that fits into War Machine. Moving on, which is what I did at Expo, because it's like, saw it, I went, oh yeah, I saw pictures of that at Lock and Load, and then carried on walking. But then at the same time, I did not have time or availability to sort of sit and go, we did chat with China and stuff, and China tried to pimp War Machine to my youngest, which I thought was very funny.
oh yeah, not been in a household. 15-year-old. Not been in a household with War Machine models for their entire life, but you know.
Yeah, I did say, I think, yeah, it's more than enough experience of being around War Machine and a variety of other miniature games. But yeah, cool. Thank you for that. No, I didn't realise that was the what that was.
Yes. I'm trying to think if there's anything. Oh. I did bug Russ on two things. First of all, I did my traditional whinge to him, like, why are you providing slotter bases?
And you can print your own, Mike. What are you complaining about?
And he went, okay. So, I think there's only one place that's packing those in with things. Most places use the SFG ones, and I think that one place that's packing them in just has loads of leftover D&G ones. I did also then get a story of what happened when Russ tried to order SFG bases. Let's just say that Russ presumed that the bases followed a linear scale thing between the size of the lip and the size of the inner and the size of the outer. He assumed that that was the case.
What? That doesn't make sense.
This is not the case. The 30 mil...
Well, no, it can't be the case.
It apparently does for 40, 50, and 80.
Okay. Okay.
But for 30, the size of the base rim is off by...
Larger,
quite a margin. So somewhere in SFG headquarters, there are bags and bags and bags of 30mm bases where the scenic...
It looks too big.
The scenic top is somewhat larger than it should have been. Russ did suggest that perhaps these should be given out to put display models onto. But was told no, they're being buried in a cupboard, just leave them alone. So that was a bit of an oopsie. But the other thing was, and this was purely a kind of what's going on. Gallant 2. So if anyone remembers the old Gallant, he had a big chunky like helmet head on a Signar Warjack.
Yes.
And I went to Russ and went, why is the current head so tiny? And he went, oh, it's a horse. I'm like, what? I don't understand.
What?
And then he took me over to the cabinet and said, okay. There's a painted one here. Come and have a look. And it's like, oh, when you look at it from the side, because you've only seen it front on in those promotional pictures.
I have seen the real model, yeah.
He's got a very tiny head. But if you look at it from the side, he's got this like blue horse mane coming at the back, and the head is horse-shaped. And he went, Gallant is designed to be both the rider and the horse in one. Hence, he's got the couched lance and a horse head. I was like, That's cool.
What?
If you look at his legs, they're horse-like, and yeah, they've got hooves as well.
Yes,
I can't believe it.
They've got shoes on, haven't they? I did also ask you, it's like, where's the book? And he went, oh, that's one of the things we had to keep. And he pointed out to me, he's like, yeah, it's just around the side here, on the shoulder. It's not in any of the promotional photos.
It was on the shield, wasn't it? Yeah.
No, it was on the top of the hull. Yeah, it was one. It was above the head where you got that sort of like.
Seen it in the flesh, but I didn't actually examine it for that long. I was like, yeah, I've seen that.
And then he went, now, obviously it's a horse because it's got booster jets at the back to help it charge. I'm like, you didn't need to sell this to me anymore. I'm already buying it. Don't worry about that. So, yeah, just.
I need to renew my subscription at some point.
Just having that little 5-minute conversation with Russ about, you know, Gallant and Connie B has been completely rescaled because he went back to the Constance Blaze model. I was like, what's this? Is this a Warcaster for ants? She's apparently really tiny. If you go back to the original model,
I've got her somewhere. Yeah.
Apparently she's been scaled up to like 1.2 or 1.5 times the size she was.
She was a bit like one of the Black 13th.
She's mostly shield. Yes.
Yes. Well put.
So either way, having sat there and looked at that case with those two models in, I'm both one, incredibly excited to own those at some point because they look beautiful, and also terrified to paint them because I will make a hash of them. So I don't know what I'm going to do with paint scheme for them. Not even the slightest tiny bit. But I really want to own those because, yeah, they look tremendous. And I will say that model case showing off like the best of the in-house SFG stuff plus preview stuff, that was like a real nice thing to just go and have a look at. And occasionally it's like, ooh, there's a new Menoth model. Ooh, that's interesting. That's different.
No.
We did also get explained.
And every time you go and look, they might not have changed anything, but you did notice more and more every time you went back to see things.
I think they did add stuff. Didn't they say they did add things through the weekend? There was more gradually added.
Yeah, Menoth started turning up from day two, or the evening of day one or something like that. But he was very amusing in the preview that we got to the point where we had what were clearly Temple Flame Guard on the screen, the new versions, and Rich Locks was there trying to talk about them, and you can tell in his head just screaming Temple Flame Guard, and he can think of no other words to describe this unit. Like, I can't remember the modern name for them, but they're the TFG. Like, ha ha,
chunky TFG.
But there is an explanation for it, which was very interesting, in that because, you know, Menoth have effectively got almost no resources and are still this religious, stuck-in-their-way organisation, they're not as prone to change as anyone else. Now, personally, I think, yep, great in-universe explanation. But I think the second one also is that there have been statements of SFG wanting to keep in line with the traditional silhouette and looks for the War Machine factions, and I think something like this is an ideal opportunity for them to, you know, chunkify up some of the models, maybe take away some of the bits that didn't work, tailor the others, but essentially keep classic Menoth looks.
Yeah,
I agree with this in principle, but I think it also poses problems because using Winter Corps and 5th Division or Winter Guard as the example, Winter Corps are very much legally distinct Winter Guard, and they look different enough, and there is a reason why you can't use your old legacy models as Winter Corps.
Yeah.
By keeping the designs a lot closer and more nostalgia bait, yes, they keep that classical silhouette, you're actually removing a lot of the reasoning for why you couldn't use your legacy models as this new Mark IV army.
So I think what will happen when Menoth come in is that one of the old lists will drop off the face of the planet. And you will, I think, because of the closeness, you'll probably be allowed to use TFG as TFG.
Oh, I have a better answer. Go I on. Can't use TFG as TFG because I sold mine.
That's very true. I think a lot of the stuff... I mean, obviously, some of the more modern jacks and stuff aren't going to fit in line with the old stuff. But I think there's going to be a non-zero amount that carries over. But I think one of the old men off lists will just drop off the face of the planet.
I think you're right. They'll replace.
Where are we? Pictures of Menoth. Temple Guardians.
We might find some of the older other factions do the same. It might be at the same time. A lot. It happens to more than one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might find that.
Go on.
That I'm just trying to think of First Army one of the earlier legacy armies, like Trolls, one of each of the kind of, they might all disappear at the same sort of time. We might have a, there might be a bit of a cleanse at that point, which I know people won't like, but we're going to have a hell of a lot of other armies around by then.
Wow. So I've actually just looked at the Temple Guardians list. That's a lot smaller than I thought it was.
Yeah, it's not a lot in there, is it?
Well, you've got your TFG, you've got your, units-wise, Choir, Daughters, the Daughters Cav, Cleansers,
yeah.
TFG,
yeah.
And Roven and the Honor Guard. That's it.
Huh? But it's a bit like a modern army, isn't it? They tried to make Mark IV kind of armies with those older lists to an extent.
Yeah,
trolls are similar. Try and build an old fashioned. I've kept my trolls. I love my trolls. I played my trolls to death. But I can't build a new army. I can't build a Mark IV army with it.
Oh, you don't. Well, you're incapable of building the miserable meat mountain.
Yes, because you can't put Krill warriors into Krill company, for example.
But even then,
There's too many.
Look at United Krills. There's 10 units there where there's not that many in Temple.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah, yeah.
That's very interesting. I mean, obviously they've got a load of warjacks because. You know, Menoth were around for a while and they got one or two jacks in every single supplement, even if some of them were a bit flaky.
Or a bit Sabre's another one, or yeah.
Both Colossals are in there for some reason. I don't even remember.
I like Judica.
I don't even remember Eye of Truth. Oh, it's the Malachus bonded jack. That makes sense. Yeah, I still think Avatar's coming out with their 80mm war jack, and you cannot convince me otherwise.
I would assume so, definitely. Well, no 100%. Contest. Totally agree. Yes, please. Two of them, please, yes.
Also, if they reprint Harby, I'm throwing my toys out the pram. That's it.
I'm sure they won't.
If I see that feat again, I just... Oh.
I think we'll obviously get a new kind of Fuhrer, high Hierophant Fuhrer or some nonsense like that. Who knows? We'll get something. We'll get reimagined and we'll get some new stuff. It'll be a repeating pattern. And... I'm here for it. I'm like, very few of the new armies that are coming out. I thought I'd like the vampires. They're okay. The fact that Dom's picking them up is making me go, you know what? I might leave it. But Menoth.
I will say, everyone and their dog picking up Fane of Nero has made me go, I think I'll take a break. I think I'll pick something else.
Yeah, me too.
Which is fine. Okay. Anything more we want to say on Lock and Load?
I think we covered just about everything.
Yeah. I mean, on top of that, there was also a goodie bag with some nice bits and pieces in, and a free bottle of P3 because you know you can't have enough of those. I got Menoth White highlights, well, or whatever, devout white. Perfect for me because I use a load of that paint. So
I got a sludgy green. Can't remember what it was called.
I will say that the paint and take table was well stocked with every single P3 paint, except Thamar Black, which every 10 minutes someone go, "So I've got the black." Like, no, but we can offer you three viable alternatives.
We nicked them already.
Yeah. I think overall I had a great amount of fun at the event. I didn't spend my time at the event in the way that I thought I would, and I think if I did go back again, what I might do is, yeah, sure, I'll bring an army, but I'll just bring a tray of like unpainted models, and I might just sit at the paint and take and just waffle with people so long as there's people there to waffle with, because that really was a great time. And a nice social way of getting some painting done.
I call that podcasting, to be honest.
I can't paint and podcast. Never have been able to.
I'm painting right now.
I'm sat here with Behemoth 2 next to me, knowing that he needs to be painted for the Welsh. Spoilers for my lists. You know, in case you're at the bottom four tables.
I think I will be, don't worry.
You can
are you not? Are you not? Are you not first aid drop? Zero and two drop.
Amazing, you went for the same numbers that I was going to.
Well, that was my classic.
Yeah, the O2 drop is a well-publicised thing. But no. No, I don't intend to. I've never dropped from Welsh so far.
No, me neither.
Yeah. So, and it's back in the hands of Martin Jenkins this year, so chaos will ensue.
Yeah, it's because chat abuse at him and stuff, and he'll shout it right back.
Yeah, and don't forget, faction lock for those of us going is in 3 days.
I've done that. I remember that, and I wasn't sure what the date was, so I did it. So I've done mine.
Yeah, it's I'm taking Wintercall. There's no way I can paint up enough of anything else in enough time. I was briefly tempted, but again, that's part of any other business. So,
I've been an idiot, and I'm still painting right now.
Don't.
We'll come on to that.
The other thing that we've had since the last time we recorded, moving smoothly onto another topic, was...
Oh, no, good segue. I like it.
The mid-year update.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because they said at the start of the year they want to do one update a year.
Yes.
However, it has become clear that some models were given rather ambitious outlooks on the game. And had to be perhaps pulled back a little from their rather lofty positions.
I don't think they had to do it. I think it would have waited till January.
I mean, don't get me wrong. They did at least give enough time so the meta had a chance to adapt. And I think, yes, in some ways it did. But also there was no... what's the term? There was no interactive play with things like Slaughterhouse. Unless you could...
Well, unless your caster was sturdy.
Yes. Unless you couldn't be pushed, it was nigh on impossible to stop that happening. But, I mean, they did put out a list of what they were hoping to achieve, what guidelines they were using. Basically, yeah, there's a whole rhetoric behind what they were doing, which basically comes down to, was it making the game worse? Like, is something so poor that it doesn't work? Is something so good that it always wins? Is it just not a fun play experience? And they kept it down to a reasonable number of models.
I would actually say I was quite surprised at how many models were touched. I was expecting it to be the bare minimum, as in literally the house and maybe one or two other things. See, so many things adjusted.
That's
quite a surprise. But maybe they thought, we're doing an update, so we could, these other things could have waited till January, but because we're doing an update, we could sink them through with it as well. And, I mean, we thought it was with the one main update each year would be it. But I don't knock them for wanting to touch extreme problem points, having played into Double House.
Ooh.
That is oppressive. That is really oppressive, and I say that as a Grimkin player.
Yeah.
And that shaped one of the lists. Actually, no, it shaped both of my lists going into the Welsh, and that really shouldn't be the case. And so casting back to when Big Pig reigned supreme and they waited for January, they said at the time that, in hindsight, they would have fixed him earlier on in the year, but... with only having just taken the property on and everything else, they didn't want to upset the cart too much at that stage.
Yeah.
And I think a limited touch in the middle of the year for things that are very obviously out of kilter is entirely acceptable. And to be honest, the main offender here is the Slaughterhouse, which actually didn't come out in its current form until,
March.
It has been very quickly realized and stamped on in the space of 3 months that this is not okay. And I think that level of responsiveness is fairly admirable.
So I have a problem with that. I don't disagree with everything you've said. I really don't. But I'm going to say two words, Guild Ball. So that's my worry. I like annual updates. I don't like too many updates. I can't keep up, and I will stop playing the game if we get more than two a year. I like one a year. I don't really like two a year. It's hard to keep up. I play most weeks, and I still struggle. Maybe I'm getting old. A player might be getting old. But I didn't play Guild Ball, but I know a lot of people who did, and I don't like what happened with too many updates, too much responsiveness, too much kind of like, here's a new model. Fan bases, players have cracked it. They've realized it's broken. Oh, we'll nerf it once everybody's bought it. It got to the point where no one was buying anything until the nerf had happened or this had happened, and it just killed the game. So there is a danger side to this. Now, once a year, totally happy with, love it. I like that we have one a year. The second one a year, now, the only thing I don't like is the escalation. So if it is two a year, if it is a major one in January and a minor one in June, and that's where we stay, actually, I don't mind. My fear is that is what happened with Guild Ball, and it became quarterly, and then suddenly it became more than that, I think, at times. So that's my concern.
I mean, one thing that I would say is we're not at the kind of the heights of, what was it, was it CID?
Yeah.
Which was madness. I mean, that's the point where, like, I would go to club 1 week, taking a list, and then go back the next week. It's like, I can't play that list anymore. It just doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, that was bad. Oh, great.
That was way going over the top. I mean,
you didn't have to do that. You didn't have to do that, but we all did it anyway, didn't we? Yes, and we were all trying to play those new rules that came out and play test those rules and try it. But you didn't have to do it, but at the same time, we all did. So
yeah, because everybody wants to play the new hotness, don't they? They want to.
Yeah, you're right.
What I would say is this does look like light touch where it's not where it's not. Oh god, this is broken. We need to fix it. It's light touch. So, for instance, if we just go through faction by faction, okay? You've got Krix first. So, Mortenebra perfected. Her feat...
What's that?
Basically remains the same, but they change it to being... The Warjack comes back within 3 inches rather than completely within. And rather than forfeit its activation, it can forfeit movement or action. That's all the change they've made there. And it's because Mortenebra, not winning a lot, they said it was vulnerable to remove from play stuff, so they said we'll give that Warjack a little bit more on the turn it comes in. So what you could do is place it 3 inches in front of her, use Empower, get some points, and you can actually do something meaningful with it on the turn it comes back in, rather than just putting it a Warjack to go, yeah, you've killed it once, kill it again. So I mean, and then as well on top of that, you've got the Mechanithral Swarms, which have they've gone from getting an elite cadre combo strike to just having flat combo strike. I think, was that it for them? Yeah, pretty much it. They're also getting a command attachment later in the year to go with them. But basically they've said, we're just giving them this advantage because we'd like to see more of them on the table. We want to see swarms of them. And we're not seeing that, which is...
So these are just sort of like quality of life, like adjustments, which... I can understand, but it is when things sort of escalate, I guess, when they're trying new things is more of the issue.
I think what you'll see, the big swings you'll see in January, like the point where they go, actually, we need to redesign this. But like, okay, if we go for Gravediggers, here's Kane. Kane had Mage Sight. Which they've said, actually, that's probably a bit too much. So they've changed it so that he now has a spell for one that allows him to gain Mage Sight.
Himself, but he can't put it on other people. Yeah.
And that's it. That's the change that's been made. So if you want to see through that stealth, you're going to pay a focus for it. You've got one fewer shot, which against some casters is enough.
So I don't begrudge the Kane change. Don't get me wrong. My problem is not any of the specifics. It's more the concern of escalation of more of it. Because I do have one specific issue.
Yeah, it's the slippery slope effect that you're concerned
about. That's my concern, yeah. Yeah, because we've seen it before from SFG. That's my concern, yeah. And hopefully they're aware of that. I'm sure they're aware of that, to be perfectly honest. We know them.
Yeah.
We know they're not stupid. We know that they'll be aware of it. So I'm going to say it. in case no one else says it. I'm sure somebody else will say it, but
I think they publicly
look Jamie in the eye and say it.
But isn't this an inevitability though, with adding more and more to the game? We will reach a rules bloat, and we will see the need for.
I mean, you're talking about the product development life cycle there, which is going to horribly boring levels.
There is a difference here in that before, yes, rules bloat, but you are adding more and more models to existing factions, and through all the will in the world, you couldn't test every single combination and permutation of buffs. Whereas what we're moving to is realistically 2, maybe 3 armies a year. But each of those armies is pretty self-contained. And something like Winter Core or Storm Legion or Orgoth, they acknowledged are very close to being complete. And then they will be done and on the shelf. And then, there'll be balance changes for them to keep them in line with everything else. But you don't have to worry about, we've released this solo for this army, and then we've got a runaway combo of this and this and this and this, and the world explodes.
Yeah, no, I just don't want to return, and I don't think we will, to the days of CID. It was just too much.
I think SFG are very well aware of what happened with CID. I think we're on a TikTok cycle now, so you kind of got the big changes in January. If they need to make them, then they've got a half year change that they can make as well on a more limited scale.
But they didn't do a mid-year update last year. No. I don't think it's guaranteed that there will be one.
No.
I did find it amusing with our Australian colleagues on the business podcast, where they were like, it's nice to see other people struggle in the same way we do for CanCon, as in they have their largest event usually just after the January update, and we're now looking at the Welsh for a few weeks of this one.
But I genuinely don't think this radically changes the game. I mean, okay. So, I mean, continuing on with the changes. Okay.
Go.
Cynthia Roscoe, her weapon gains reload 1, but on her feet, she no longer gains an extra shot.
I quite like hers. I like that change.
Yeah, very small change.
But I think it makes her more playable. Not like in time for the Welsh, but I think I like the idea of putting her on the table with that. It's I like it. Yeah.
Storm Legion, you have the Striker going to Def 13. And it's Voltaic Halberd and Voltaic Hammer gaining +1 pow.
I'd go further with this one and say, I wish I still had my Storm Legion.
same token, the Courser goes from Def 13 to 14, which, facing Def 14 Warbeasts at the moment, gives me the fears.
Makes me like the idea of Storm Legion.
But the Dodge Head went up in price by a point, because Dodge on Def 14 Warjacks is, quote, to put it mildly, rather good. Yes. Their Storm Thrower has been reducing cost from 3 to 2. The Voltaic Broadsword went up to power 13. And the Voltaic Spear also went from power 12 to power 13. So again, it's like little touches. One that's relevant for me at the moment, and this is a more extensive one, is Helith. So Helith lost fire group because they said her battle group just outranges everyone. It's not fun. But to compensate,
not wrong.
They went, okay, her pistols go from range 10 to 12, so she's still effectively at the same range. She gets force aura, so +2 defense against ranged for a round, and also blast resistance, I believe. And her feat now, instead of granting +2 arm to warrior models, grants +2 arm to all friendly faction models. Which is, it's interesting. I mean, I will admit, with the army I'm playing at the moment, losing fire group isn't a huge thing, but I can see it for larger armies being more of a problem. But having the range 12 on her pistols kind of makes up for it, because she's nice with that whole thing of like dishing out grievous wounds and Phantom Seeker shots. So,
I haven't actually played her since the changes have hit Dusk, and I would like to. I don't know where I'm going to go with the faction after the Welsh, but I do like the idea of dusting off for Dusk. It's tempting, especially if you've got three of those.
Yes.
So I might need to take them all off your hands.
I have two from the battle box. You can have them. I've got two from the battle box, and the one that I've actually got that I use is the one that's more retribution themed.
Oh, cool. I've got one, but it's been somewhat overpainted, and it's a bit like not so great. And I could do it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, nice. Make it a bit nice. You can have one. I'll bring it along with me.
Thank you very much.
Old Umbre had a bit of a tweak to Yharnam. So they've reverted her feat to grant cleave rather than additional melee. But it now functions as an aura rather than a pulse. So you only get the benefit while you're in it. Which is interesting. I mean, that's strict nerf, I believe.
Seems it.
Yeah. But they've also added a benefit for Wintercore. Warjax and her battle group can gain 4 focus instead of 3. Which... I mean, if you've got a couple of Arcanists going around, a couple of 4 focus Warjacks, that's no mean thing. But she doesn't.
I think that's probably the most earth-shaking thing potentially in the update.
So, and she's fine, I guess. She's better in Umbra than she is in Wintercore. Whether that'll tweak the numbers too much, who knows. Lesnoy, what'd he get?
He had 2 spells swapped out. Befuddle and Inviolable Resolve are gone, and they're replaced with new spells that do more or less the same things, but slightly differently. So the armor buff spell is now warrior models only, so you can't put it on your cohorts, and the Befuddle replacement is a 2-inch placed rather than a 3-inch advance.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
it's also shorter ranged as well.
Yeah. But... I mean, spoilers, but this is Yharnam and Bodan are exactly my Welsh pair, and it hasn't actually changed my list at all. I'm quite happy with where they're at and what they're doing. Nothing's really changed materially. It's just an adjustment of ranges, more or less. And yeah, I'm quite happy with that.
Oh, interestingly, the change from Inviolable Resolve to Sacrilegious Fervor. Ooh. So apparently one of the problems was that the immunities pushes slams and knockdowns. But with Sacrilegious Fervor, he gains fury points each time a model with it on is destroyed. Yeah, that's interesting.
A very damned if you do, damned if you don't. Do you want to kill this blocking model and give me a transfer?
Yeah, just lob it on a unit that's occupying the point at the end of turn. Like... okay, well, you can have this flag, but you're going to have to kill 5 guys and give me 5 fury to do it. That's... okay. Yeah, not sure I like that. Moving on to the Wintercore, we have Savarin, who now can upkeep spells and warrior models without spending focus, which, given Escort is one of his, that's effectively a free focus every turn. We take those.
Because it goes on him. Yeah, of course, yeah. Yep. I was thinking, it's Warjax now. Yeah.
It's him, Lancaster. Vilkul gains Reload 1 and Weapon Master on her Thrown Axe, which is... yeah, sure. I'll take that. All day, every day. It makes her more active on turns where she's not in the assassination. She can just come forward and just scalpel something out for a couple of focus, which I... It means it's a more dangerous playstyle, but I think it makes her more interactive. And it means she's going to be in some interesting positions every so often. And she gets the better alchemical mask as well, which means she ignores all forms of concealment. So for now she can ignore her own fog of war, which was something of an issue. Hey-ho. Yeah, Vilkul is in my Welsh pairing along with Sikora, so it's nice to see she's got a little bit of a buff. Surprise, Baranova's been nerfed. So her arcane went from 7 to 8, it's now back down to 7. But they are keeping the large control area. And that's about it. I honestly can't see going from focus 8 to focus 7 being too much of a hindrance for her, especially with that feat still going on in the 16-inch control area. But we'll have to see. Yes! Sergeant Lazarenko. Kador has no ambush. Wintercore has no ambush. Except now it does. Lazarenko. Oh? Yeah, Lazarenko's gained a couple of points of armor. He's picked up Unstoppable. He's lost Reposition 3. His weapon has gone down from 12 inch range to 10, but he can now ambush.
Okay.
I like the idea of SKS models being able to ambush. And having anything ambush in Winter Core, just pure gold.
It's thematic. I quite like that.
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked to see it on the Hounds as well, maybe, but I think they might be a bit too powerful if they did ambush.
It's a terrifying thought.
Jesus Christ. It's bad enough with advanced deploying how fast they come at you.
Yeah, but they have in most lists lost 2 points of armor because you can't iron flesh them on in as many cases anymore. Sadness. But yes, Lazarenko can now ambush.
For whom?
Yes. Onwards, the Shadow Flame Shard.
Lilith, yeah. Lilith's interesting.
Yeah, right. Lilith's full draw's been reduced from 12 to 10.
It's reasonable.
Yeah. The most common use of this shot type is to deny Colossal and Gargantuan models their impressive suite of initial attacks with critical stagger. Would you know anything about that, Kurt?
I might just know something about that last year at the Welsh. Yeah, I might have known something about that quite a lot. Stopping, what I can't remember what the bloody thing's called, the Kador Colossal from moving up the table at all, whole game. Yep.
Second change is she's lost Warping Winds.
Shame, but kind of understandable.
But you still have other support models that can basically stand next to her, so you know, you're probably paying a couple of points in tax for it, but I don't think that's in the world. Incarnate Knights. So the January update, they got plus one arm. And they're being reverted back because they're
I was hoping they might get a second attack. Yeah, I was hoping they might trade the plus one armor for a secondary attack or some kind of follow-up attack or whatever it's called, when you kill something, you can attack again. But then they've got no way of making a second attack. Yeah, Cleave would be nice on them.
They already feel very powerful for me.
They are. Yeah, they're very resilient. Yeah.
Okay, next up we have Kishtar, who also lost Fire Group. It's weird, those ranges are reducing all the time. It's almost like gun lines aren't fun lines.
Indeed.
But she has gained Banishing Ward, so... Oh, and her personal weapon went from range 10 to 12. So, yeah, I think that's roughly in line with other changes they've made. Sabreth, the Eternal Annihilation, apparently has the best list.
She lost a spell.
Yes, she can definitely stand to lose one of the best lists of the game. Therefore, lost Inviolable Resolve, which... losing one spell like that. Not going to change the playstyle caster. Next up, we got Trollbloods. You got Firequill. So he gained Field Marshal Runic Ammunition. Oh.
Interesting. I'm not sure how usable it is, but I like it.
But it's essentially free anemi if you hit with a range weapon, isn't it?
Yeah, but sometimes you want to cast the anemi before you shoot the gun. So it's a little bit scornogistic, I think, a little bit, but we'll see. We'll try it and see. It's that kind of thing, isn't it?
Details. Secondly, Farkle's feat turn was being too oppressive, so we've turned it down a little. It still grants boosted range damage rolls to everything, but it's only Farkle's battle group that gained true sight rather than everything in the control range.
That's quite nice.
That's fair. The next change, I look at and go, this is the biggest slap on the wrist I've ever seen, because it is purely a slap on the wrist, and that is the Lockerbash Brothers have gained minus one Deaf and Arm. I'm not sure that fixes them, but we'll have to see.
They are great.
I think the Deaf is more impactful than the Arm. But
The difference between, what is it, plus three for each one, so armor 19 if they're all stood in a triangle. Previously it would have been armor 20. But the difference between Deaf 13 and Deaf 12, that's noticeable.
It is different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing 1 point more damage per attack that hits, but then you've also got more attacks that are hitting as well.
Yeah.
It might be enough.
I mean, you've tipped it from if someone is mat 6 needing 7s to hit to needing 6s, which is not a small amount.
It's the nice part of the curve.
Yeah. Kithgard only had one change, which is unsurprising given that they're new. In that now 120 mil Colossals and Gargantuans can destroy their trapdoor markers, as well as the demolition ability on powder keg defences.
I'm really happy for this, because having played in Skipguard, even just for once, lock and load, the ability for them to put a trapdoor with no intention of using it, but just going, you can't stop your huge base model here at all, is infuriating. It just denies a chunk of the board for you to move around on.
Yeah, and given the Colossals are ones that they've already had to be very careful about designing around in scenarios to say, no, they do need to be able to move around the board. It makes sense why they would make that change.
I mean, ideally, I would have liked to see that have been the... I forget what's called them. The rule that's given to scatter terrain where extra large and huge bases can destroy it. But I'll take this as a starter.
Yeah, that's what you mean. I think they've gone with the lightest touch they can so far, just to see if that moves the needle.
I think having 80s be able to do it, having all your 80s doing it, might have been a bit too, made them a bit too frivolous, and might have underpowered the army as a whole, which, much as I don't hate the idea of doing that,
especially because almost every army's packing an 80 mil base somewhere.
Yeah, if 80 mils could do it, you can get them fairly cheap in different armies.
Yeah.
Might be a problem.
What this does is increase the value of a Colossal. I mean, if we're going to put the business side on the rules, one of my arguments for the Slaughterhouse as it was is that this increases the value of a Colossal, because your Colossal can't be pulled by the Slaughterhouse. So the simple answer to the Slaughterhouse is to bring your own Colossal. Why not two? And that will shut down the Slaughterhouse problem. Adding this to only the Colossals can destroy the trapdoors, more value. If we're going to look at the business side, SFG might sell more Colossals out of it. Is that their aim? Who knows? But I think that they are such a point sink that they should have... unique benefits like this.
I mean, if you don't want to buy a Colossal, you can spend but a single point and bring a powder keg.
Yeah.
You choose where to place it, start the game. And anything medium based or larger with a throw power attack within 1 inch can lob it and destroy a defense or trapdoor within 10 inches of it from the table. Like, that's pretty decent.
It is. Like, often forgotten as well, certainly by me.
Well, I mean, paying for defences has only just become a thing, because obviously you've got the command.
No, but that rule was there. That rule was there on the powder keg before.
Yes, but it's been changed to include trapdoors.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yes. So, okay. Next on the list, we have Convergence of Sirius and Axis. I just think you were you weren't a fan of at the at the time this came out. You're like, oh no, it's changed.
I'm not. I mean, I would say it's the most serious change, but that's because I'm playing this army. It's caused me to readdress my Welsh lists, because this takes Axis from being head and shoulders above everybody else, or at least head above everybody else, because he had. I can't disagree with their description. His feet specifically meant he could speed up your army and slow down the enemy, so you could use it defensively, but it also gave you that threat projection, so you could threat potentially 13 inches from some of the jacks with a combination of his feet and a beacon. So this changes that down to 11, because now his feet will only... it slows the enemy down. So it's a bit like as a old Umbrae caster that has a feet that's similar. Dom, you'll remember better than I.
Yeah, that's Max said. And we were having that discussion. I remember it saying, looking at the two feet going... They are so similar, but one's objectively better.
Yes, which is clearly what somebody else thought. But I don't disagree with their points. If you want to play somebody that's faster, you play Aurora. But Aurora doesn't help you hit harder. And it also removes the hit harding too. So he had +2 on melee damage rolls, as well as +2 speed, and the enemy can't charge, and the enemy's at -2. So yeah, it was a lot. But it meant that you could threaten... You could threat project similarly to the modern Mark IV armies with at least that army. But Axis is no longer that significant lead list, and I've reworked it quite significantly. I am still taking him, but he's my second rather than my first now.
Gaining razor wall and an inch of melee is interesting.
Yeah, that's quite. I mean, that's. I like that. I do like that.
Especially,
and,
especially in this edition where razor wall
was awful. Yeah, razor wall was awful. So I do quite like that.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Okay.
I think I missed that he gained melee range.
Yep. Went from 1 to 2. Which, yeah. And of course, with double strike.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you're in there with your caster, if it was gone wrong, usually.
Oh, yeah, but when you're in there with your caster, who's got 6 focus, and each time they buy an attack, they get 2.
They have unyielding.
I mean, unyielding won't matter, because you'll have just bonked the enemy caster to death before then. Because, as we all know, power 12s kill casters, power 14s kill them faster. So
fair. Yeah. I still think he's good. He's still somebody I'm taking. I'm just changing things up a bit. It's definitely he. Yeah, it doesn't make him useless. It just takes him from being that, oh, okay, auto include, because I was avoiding him when I was playing Convergence, and then I saw other people playing him and liked what they were doing. I thought I'll try him. Went, oh bloody hell, it's rather good. I'm gonna do this, and built an army on that basis, and now I'm having to rethink my army quite dramatically. So yeah. Ironically, I've gone back to the caster that I went with when I first started playing Convergence. I've gone back to Orion, and I really like Orion. So I really like Orion. As I was playing when I first started playing the faction.
Well, next on the list, we have Grimkin. Old Witch has had arcane calibrations removed from her arcane machinery, which I guess was that a reduction in spell cost?
Yes, that was the one that reduced the spells by 1 cost, which realistically it reduces her ability to do the I think the prime one that was the most egregious was boundless charge spam.
Yes.
1 cost boundless charge across the army. Everything's charging. But it also went a long way to making Scourge affordable and a lot more potent.
Yes. I mean, Scourge, power 13, 7, AoE 2, on a direct hit, knocks down. Cost 4 is on the pricey side. I'll agree with you there.
Very good.
Next up for Grimkin is the one everyone expected. we've perhaps seen a little too much of the slaughterhouse. Ingeniously referred to as, quote, the housing crisis by players.
I've heard another one. So the having the child... with 2 slaughterhouses and calling it... Oh, no, I lost it halfway through the sentence. It's not a separated family. It's not... because it's a child between 2 houses, so it's called product shared of divorce custody? Or something like that. I think you're right. I think shared custody. I think that's right. I think that is it, yeah. Because it's a child between 2 houses.
That's a dark joke.
Sorry, that's what?
That's a dark joke, isn't it?
You've known us for how long, Ben?
What?
No, I meant the community more than...
Oh, you've known the community.
I repeated it. I'll admit to repeating it.
I quite like that. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Slaughterhouse, Fury down from 5 to 4, which they've said it has plenty of opportunity to get free charges and free animi. Losing Fury is not the greatest one in the world. No. And also it can't drag enemy models through terrain or enemy models, which is the change everyone expected.
It can drag through terrain, but not enemy models.
Yes.
Oh, yes, sorry, yes, you're quite correct. It can now only drag enemy models through terrain features, not other enemy models. Yes, you're quite correct. I have misread. But still...
Which is a difference.
Yes, not through enemy models is the expected one, which is good.
So, to be honest, I was expecting the range to be reduced. The fact that that's day 12 is the longest range drag in the game, I believe. And I would have put money on it gaining the qualifier of non-leader model. Ooh. So the fact that you can still drag leaders is very interesting. I thought that would have been a very easy change to make on it.
I mean, I guess if you're going for the lightest touch of lightest touches, doing that's not, yeah, it is, it keeps it competitive, but not hideous as it was.
Yeah.
It's still usable as, like, I'm going to kill your caster and you can't stop me.
But except you can now. You can shield and screen, and it might not stop the outcome, but the Grimkin player has to be more creative about how they go about what they're going to do. They have to actually reach out and kill something that's in the way rather than just straight up ignoring it.
Yeah, they have to make decisions rather than say, am I within 17 at the start of my turn?
Yeah.
Yeah. Last change then is Agathon for Infernals. They've removed Field Marshal Sacred Ward, which was the change they actually applied to him in January. So they've gone, yeah, actually, no. It's a bad idea.
It's interesting that a bunch of these changes that have been made are reversals of things done in January.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. On top of this, they did actually say, yes, the new command cards are out. Everyone now shares 5, except where there are specific changes. So, for instance, for Grimkin, they get their full hand of cards. Gravediggers, I believe they also get some bonus ones for their dropping in of crates and stuff.
Yeah,
heavy airdrops, light airdrops. So it does say for the Motherland remains unchanged, I believe.
Yeah. Cador Keep for the Motherland.
Yeah, except I think on at least one screen I haven't seen it so far. It is in the list, but I don't know whether that was quite as universally implemented as it could have been. I'll have to see. I can check that now.
So despite my my obviously lots of complaints at the start of this, I do like the command card change a lot.
Mm.
Having played with them, yes.
So before playing with them, what I like about this is the big thing I don't like about command cards was making the wrong choices and second guessing myself and trying to make sure I chose the right ones and always feeling like I've chosen the wrong ones or not using them all properly or not using. This is now an in-game decision, not an army list decision, and I like that. Now I've got all the options, and it's up to me if I use one when I want the other. But it's making the right choice at the right time. That's fine. I'm happy with that. I don't mind that I had to lose one because I can't use both anyway. I can't take all of them anyway. So this gives me all of them, kind of. But I have to be careful which one I use, which one I'm losing. Obviously, they're kind of combined together. I like that.
It's a step further than I think I said before. I would have seen the command cards be choosable at the start of the game, like the spell rack used to be.
Yeah.
This is taking that even a step further to say you've got all the effects and a couple of new ones, but you still have to choose when, at the point of use, what you're willing to give up for that effect.
Yeah, that's the part of the magic. The fact that you...
Lucky Penny is no longer absolutely I'm going to use that at this point. You're now going, well, damn, if I need Blessing of the Gods.
Yeah.
Do I give up that for a later turn?
It makes those assassination runs a bit more dicey. Because, like, oh, do I take the extra focus or do I take the blessed?
Ooh. I can recommend Spell Piercer as a spell instead.
I mean, I play Vilkul, who's got a blessed axe, so I don't care. But, a blessed weapon master axe with reload.
Jesus Christ.
Oh no, I get to throw it twice a turn. Oh no. But yes, I think overall, command cards, good change. A lot of people are looking for decks to be made, which they are, they'll alternate from the usual places over the year. If you want your physical cards rather than just in the app.
Tokens?
Yeah, tokens would work as well at this point. Perhaps even doubles.
That, I believe, is alluding to my last event I gave out, like poker chip tokens for each of the new command cards.
Ah, okay.
That was indeed well picked up.
Well, that is the entirety of this mid-year update. Like I said, I think it's fairly light touch. Possibly touched on, as you said, more models than we expected. We knew it was going to be in the 20-ish range. Some of the changes I expected. Some of the changes, like the Signar Jacks, just...
Yeah.
They're scary now. Yeah. Very point sufficient. Def 14 lights is a problem. Overall, I think we need to sit and wait to see what comes out of it, but definitely not the worst change in the world.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Any other thoughts on the mid-year update before we move into any other business?
No.
I shall take that as a no. Okay. Benj, any other business?
Well, I thought we were going to talk about UK Games Expo as a topic, but I guess we could just cover it in this bit.
We did say we were going to AOB it, so you go ahead.
Oh, fine. No, sorry. I went to UK Game Expo very briefly. Was there for a couple of hours, saw everything I wanted to see, specifically Kickstarter that had been through Kickstarter hell, called Ember Obsidian Protocol, which was a mech-based tabletop war game with modular robots. Really up my alley, but unfortunately they didn't have a lot of sort of like some of their starter stuff ready, which was a bit weird. The sort of buzz around the game had been rekindled by an Australian YouTuber who'd received some sort of like marketing material, and they're trying to sort of, I think they're trying to make a push to support this new two-player starter to get more interest in the game. Apparently it's very popular in South Korea. Didn't realize that they had a thriving tabletop scene, but apparently they do. So I got to speak to some of the guys that did the Kickstarter, got a few of the models. They're hard plastic. They've moved into like doing boutique models to support like fulfilling the Kickstarter stuff, so they're doing resin printing of some of their mechs. Really cool designs, nice artwork. Currently I'm painting on my desk the character warjack from the Gravediggers, the one with all the fancy
plugger, or the new one,
the other one,
Beaker,
yeah, the one that comes with Alice and Jake's, yeah. Painting Beaker. That it's a very nice model. I'm quite enjoying painting it. And apart from that, I think that's about it.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
Dom, any other business?
Yeah, so I'll take this opportunity to announce that my next one-day event is going to be on Sunday the 2nd of August. 16 players, regular 100-point steamroller. More details in the very near future, or actually, by the time this is online as an episode, tickets should be up for sale already. So, yeah, get your tickets, come along, and I'd love to see as many people as possible.
Very nice, very nice. I will try and have this out in a timely fashion.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this episode actually going to be out well after the tournament's done and finished?
In August? Harsh. Shots fired.
I mean, you say that. I mean, given that due to illness and other circumstances, the March episode came out yesterday.
oh.
Yeah. I mean, the March episode.
I'll take it back, Benj.
That's all right.
It was somewhat hampered by the fact that pretty much as soon as I'd finished recording it, I was basically put out for a month with illness, and then things continued from there with just being busy. But it has never been edited and put out there, so I'll try and make this one a bit of a quicker turnaround than 3 months. Yeah, go team.
We love you, Mike.
Anything else, Dom?
No, not really. I would be painting something right now, but actually my two lists for the Welsh are all done. I think I'm there and ready. So,
disgusting.
I've got an event this weekend where I will trial my lists as they currently stand and invariably come back on Monday and start painting frantically with changes, but for now?
Of course, yeah.
I think I'm happy.
Okay. Kurt, Any other business?
Hello. I also went to the UK Games Expo a few weeks ago, whenever it was. Yeah, really good. Went on the Friday. Went with my girls for the third year in a row. I did not think my teenage daughters would still be really interested in going to the expo, but they really are. I really enjoyed it. We had a plan. We had my eldest and I both looked at, because they did pins again. They did little pin badges from certain stands. You could go and collect them. We were a bit slow off the mark last year and didn't get as many as we wanted to. This year we had a plan, a strategy, and we were on it from the start. We did rather well. Really good time. Even to the point of playing some games. Oh, and we appeared, I didn't say this before, we appeared in the BBC coverage of the UK Games Expo. Nice. It's on the BBC website. There is in the first big picture, there's a picture of, I think it's the Asmodee stand. We're playing Azul. You can see we're stood right by a massive Azul poster. We're sat there playing Azul, me and my children and I, on the BBC website, which is quite funny. I don't know who noticed. Somebody else noticed it. I thought it was very funny. We played Azul. We bought my mum Azul, and we haven't played it yet, so it was a good excuse because we wanted to pin, so we thought we'd play that.
Just go to the back of that. Azul is a fantastic game. Yeah. If anyone wants to pick it up, it's remarkably tactile. Those tiles are just
so lovely. They are lovely. I totally agree, and it's one of those games that we got shown how to play it, which is lovely. So we have to retry. It's not a complicated game, it's layered, isn't it? You look at it; it seems really complicated until you have a first turn. Then it seems really simple, and then it gets really complicated again.
Yeah, your choice
on the tactics and
your choice on every single turn is to look at any one of the places you can take tiles from, and take all of one color. That's it. That's all you gotta do. Really simple.
Yeah.
Really, really simple.
Until you start looking at what other people are doing and looking at what they need and stealing those.
As if I would.
Oh, I can't imagine that. You're doing that, Mike. It's not like you.
I've got the travel.
I had a really good day. Got up there, seen you early. From long ago, may recall, used to occasionally appear in a submarine on this podcast. on the Bushido stand. Still very much into the Bushido. I've made a point of catching up with Alex at the expo, if not before, not otherwise. Him getting some regular sass from my teenage daughters, which he's more used to because he has his own teenage daughters. So, caught up some other old faces, John Pickles and a few other people. It was really good. Thoroughly enjoyed the day. Bought a few games, but I really enjoyed the Final Girl stand as usual. I can't remember what they're called now. Final Girl is a single player game, but we keep buying modules for it. You can play it together. You can play it cooperatively, which is fantastic. It's a horror game, but it's not a scary horror game. It's just really good fun. I had a really good game today. And I am putting far too many highlights on my bright pink Convergence. That's what I'm doing at the moment. I've stopped right now, but that's what I've been painting this evening.
Just to back to one of the things you mentioned there, I was really surprised to find out recently that Final Girl actually spiraled out of, I believe it is the Hostage Negotiator game that was meant to be one player versus the machine kind of thing, which is really fascinating to know about. But once you work out, like, oh yeah, it's got that same kind of like mechanics.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, apparently it is based on the same engine. Does it still do the
Rider games? Is that right? Yeah,
Van Rider. Yeah. Does it still do
Van Rider? That's it. Yeah.
The whole thing of the new, I don't know, expansions coming in effectively a VHS. Format.
Yes, so you've got a VHS, old style VHS box, but the sides are magnetized. So one is the villain board, and one is the location dashboard. And the game itself comes as a kind of a module for how to play a game system. And then each VHS style box has a map and a stat thing for the bad guy, and you can mix and match them and everything else. But and it comes with two final girls. The two girls left alive, who are, or the one girl left, two examples of the girl left alive. But it started off, if you aren't familiar with it, it started off in classic horror with Halloween type scenarios and other sort of classic 60s and 70s horror. The second series went into more 80s, so it was like an Alien and and The Thing, obviously named differently and to avoid copyright infringement, but and then they've diversified a lot more. We did pick up, there's a Con exclusive, which wasn't out last year. They were talking about it. We had a really good chat with them last year. They've done what's it called? It's basically Scream, but it's called something else, Screech. and we also picked up the equivalent Five Nights at Freddy's with a box of funky miniatures to go with it as well. Because my children love Five Nights at Freddy's a bit too much. Yeah, if you could think of it from a horror perspective, now that, oh, there's a Jurassic Park looking Raptor Star One coming. But I don't think that was there. That was a poster of it. So that's they're doing a season, I think every other year with a box. You can get them as a collected box. But the nice thing about going to cons is you can easily buy them off the shelf, as individual expansions, individual adventure things, which is quite nice. And you can mix and match them. I've never ever mixed because we've not played absolutely all of them yet because I bought two seasons back when the second lot was in Kickstarter.
It's very much up there in variety with the Unmatched series, where that has... I mean, that's also a reskin of another game in... Was it Jedi Power Battles or something like that? Where it was a Star Wars game. The license got canned and they reworked it. And now you can literally do Bruce Lee versus Sherlock Holmes, if you fancy. It's an utterly insane collection of characters. Like there's Red Riding Hood, there's Beowulf, there's all sorts of weird stuff in there that you can pick up. In fact, the most recent one is just the Ninja Turtles. So again, if you want the Ninja Turtles versus Sherlock Holmes, you fill your boots. Or the Ninja Turtles versus T-Rex, if you buy the Jurassic Park expansions, which have gone out of print and are hideously expensive. I suspect not as expensive as the Buffy ones.
We don't play it enough, but I do quite like Final Girl. It's I think one that really sticks with me is Terminator. You've got your kind playing a variation of Sarah Connor, and you're in a shopping mall and the Terminator is chasing after you and he morphs as he dies at different times into different Terminators from different films.
Nice.
And there is somewhere in the deck of stuff, there is a motorbike, so you can ride around a shopping mall on a motorbike up and down the escalators. We checked the rules several times to make sure you can do that to keep away from him. And there is, I think, I've never played it on harder difficulty levels, but I think I should now because I'm starting to see there's a pattern to how to succeed, which is prioritize rescuing the random people, because if they die, if you let the bad guy kill the random little yellow meeples that are the hostages or the innocents, they get much more powerful much more quickly and it's much harder. But yeah, they're good fun games. It's an entertaining random thing.
I'm going to throw out a very cold take here. Terminator 2 is the perfect action movie. Just leave it there.
Like, I'm not going to argue with you, but perfect is a strong word.
It is. Yeah. It is. And I'm going to say the director's cut version as well.
See, the difficulty is because your phrasing includes Die Hard, and that's very difficult now.
Die Hard's a Christmas movie, not an action movie.
No, it can be both. It can be two things.
It can be both. Yes, no, I'd agree with that one. It can be both.
Venn diagram.
Violent Night is a Die Hard. Yeah, so frantically painting, and have been printing, and furiously, as I said earlier on, getting frustrated, printing Convergence and painting Convergence. And the difficulty is that I started off by printing proxy models based on AIing 2D images to be able to print them early before the release of the campaign. So I had rough models to start with. Then I printed them quickly to get them on the table as authentic ones because we had an event that I wanted to go to that had to be authentic models, not dodgy, my dodgy copies. And then I've had to print them in better quality to be able to paint them nicely. So I feel like I've printed my Convergence army three times over, which is it's a part of the frustration, which wouldn't happen again. But yeah.
Do you feel that it's kind of thematic though, because that's probably how Convergence would like build themselves, like 3D?
I had not thought that. I had not thought that. That is actually
He's doing agile army development. He's painting. He's painting in sprints.
I definitely am.
And he quite literally is the product owner. So
So yeah, how about you, Mike? What's your end of the business? What's your own painting table?
So at the moment, what's on the painting table is Kador. I have just to the side of me Behemoth 2, resplendent in two-tone green at this point with some basing material on. And I have a good dozen other models that I need to basically take from just the two-tone green to fully painted, which shouldn't be a problem in time for the Welsh. I think the snipers are going to get the worst of it because I just... How can I put this? I have plenty of enthusiasm for all my models, but those guys, just nothing inspires me about them. They're a four-point unit that is going to die, so they are getting the quickest, cheapest paint job I can give them. On the other hand, the shock trooper spearmen? Question mark. They'll probably get something a bit nicer. But yes, Behemoth 2 currently on the painting table. What has just left the painting table, however, is the result of Matt Hart's seminar at Lock and Load. In that I was told just after we left, it's like, oh, by the way, we're doing a journeyman league at club. I'm like, cool. I haven't really done anything. You're like, yeah. So, you know, it's okay, new faction. Okay. I've got some dusk. They haven't really been touched. What paint scheme haven't I done? Because I'm white. Yes, I know. I haven't done white.
You fool.
Oh no, Kurt. You see, what I did was, in two sessions, this is two, not counting the undercoating, because that's a separate thing. In two sessions, I got 30 points of dusk from Halford's Grey Primer to fully painted.
Ow.
That's a heavy, a light, two five man units and a caster.
Sponging lots of off-white over the top of your grey?
No, I went from grey to coal black, then put frostbite on top of the sponged on top of the coal black, and then pro-acryl titanium white, question mark, on top of that. And yeah, I think they look quite decent. They look like run-down... retribution, because I've given them grey cloak, so green cloaks to go with everything they have. And yeah.
So my first thought: don't let Dom's wife see them.
Okay.
Dom's Kador is predominantly white.
Oh.
And I would admit it's not just Jody that says it. I have been guilty of this myself. I'm not going to lie and deny it. But he does get asked when they're going to be finished quite a lot.
Oh, that's custom.
This is the cross-eyed bear.
I mean, it's not the greatest...
But including Jody.
It's not the greatest view of them, but in the Elite Cardo chat, you will see how they look.
Yeah, you'd get some for that, I think.
Dom, are you in counselling for this slight?
It's... Yeah. I have given up fighting this. It is just my existence. And has put me against painting white in anything else.
if you prime something quite pale and everybody sees it, they go, oh, is that to go with the Kador?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've done white and green dusk. I mean, if you pick them up and eye them closely, things like the sides and backs of the heads don't necessarily have the amount of white to make the skin tone show up. But to be honest, for getting 30 points painted in two sessions, I'll take it. And like, you cannot say that though that things like the cloth and the armor looks bad. So
no, it doesn't. Tabletop quality, no, definitely. It's really nice.
Yeah,
they look really nice. I like them.
So I'm happy with them. I even got to the point of getting at GW Ard coat and going over the middle of the shield, so they're a little bit reflective.
So I've been doing. So I'm my convergence. I've been aiming. I painted the battle engine first.
Oh, okay, yep.
And did do some very extreme highlighting on the pink and then glossed all the armour, and it does look really nice. So it's just like trying to aim for non-metallic metal effect on a pink. It doesn't quite give you the metallicness, but it you put a gloss on it and it lifts it really quite nicely. So yeah, I can recommend that.
I'm going to need to back this truck up for a second. So you are painting at speed to try and get things done for the Welsh, and you've just said three words that just deep inside make me just cower in fear. Non-metallic metals. You are a...
Effect. I'm not trying to compete with Chris Cawthorn. I'm not trying to make it look like it's metallic pink, but I'm trying to give the... Because it takes too long. It takes way too long. So I am in the middle. I'm sort of using like six, seven highlights, but trying to do them quickly.
You are a glutton for punishment, sir. I look forward to seeing them, but you are a glutton for punishment.
So much.
Yeah. Well,
I can attest they do look good.
Thank you very much.
It's Kurt. He's annoyingly good.
I try. I don't feel it all the time, but I try. Until it's finished, it doesn't look great. And then you get it finished and you go, oh, I quite like that army. That's good. Move on.
I discussed this in the heart at Lock and Load. In that all models reach the ass point. In that you've put enough on there. You look at it and you go, this looks like ass. This is just bad. I hate everything about this.
Yep.
And at that point, you are maybe 5% away from finishing that model because it's those last little bits that just tie it together. And if you can work through that point where you hate looking at the model, it's fine. So, just remember if you're ever painting models and you just think it looks terrible, yeah, maybe step away 5 minutes, have a cup of tea, come back, do another 5 minutes. You'll probably be okay. Right.
Don't leave half your army unfinished for long periods of time.
That is death.
Try and get a model finished and then move on. Or try and get a unit finished and then move on. Not leave it mostly done. I'm terrible for that. I hate that. I end up with, like, right now I have one finished model for this army. One. Although I have lots that are nearly finished.
I mean,
Sunday will be on the table finished because I'm going to the same event that Dom is.
I think you said once to me, it's like, if a model leaves the painting table before it's done, it's not going back for a very long time. And that's...
I do struggle with that. It's easier now without foam cases. Magnetos, tray-based kind of plastic boxes are easier, but because it's not going into a foam case. But yes, I still have that issue, yeah.
I think the problem I have with how my cases are now... So if anyone's not seen it, I've got the white cases with the pull-out clear front. I can see what's in that case and not painted. And I can see it every single day when I come up the stairs because it's right in front of me. So that does incentivize. It's like, yeah, maybe I should go back and look at that model again. Yeah. So, whereas if it's in foam... in those old KR cases, locked away. You don't have to concern yourself with it until the next tournament. So, anyway, I think we've done quite enough. So, perhaps it's time to say, you've been listening to Elite Cadre, the Warsheen podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously. I've been Mike.
I've been Kurt.
I've been Benj, and I'm not related to Kurt, even though we share the same...
No, we should have said that earlier. I agree, we should have said that earlier.
Several years
we
ago.
Did. Well, I did like the marketing... team at Steamforge. No, we're not the same. I am sorry. I do apologise.
For being Benj?
No, for like being roughly associated to Kurt illegally somehow. It brings great shame to him.
Yeah, and I've done.
See, now there's someone else been interrupted. It's not me this time.
We'll break wood it next time. Bye, Nick.
Bye, Nick.
Bye, Alex.
Crap.
Listening to Elite Cadre, War Machine podcast. Music provided by Martin DeBont and Symphony of Spectres. For more details on War Machine and its upcoming releases, please visit steamforge.com.